look now at the loss of identity and hope for many people in Nepal clinging to land that is still moving underfoot.
This is our shelter, but it's on someone else's land. If they say get out, we have to go tomorrow. We have no place to stay. We have no land, no house, nothing. Where shall we go? What shall we eat? The only option left is death.
The aftermath of the April 7.8 magnitude earthquake in which more than 8,000 people died is a slow unfolding of a disaster that will take a generation or more to return to anything like normal life. That woman you just heard is from the town of Barabiche, one of the hundreds of thousands with nowhere to go. She's in a new BBC film that takes us into this earthquake disaster without any time-compressed Hollywood spectacle, just truth on the ground. It's called simply Our World, Nepal Survivors' Stories. Yalda Hakim is the reporter who says that painstaking rebuilding is the story of an earthquake, not those few seconds of terrifying seismic shocks.
Brick by brick, I was seeing these people in these communities rebuilding their homes, not necessarily waiting for international aid agencies to arrive or the government to turn up, because actually in many places they weren't. And the government was making no secret of the fact that they were completely overwhelmed by the scale of this disaster. In fact, they still don't have a proper sense of the true number of people who have been killed. They say it's a little over 8,500, but some of these communities haven't even been reached. So the government itself has been overstretched. The international community is there. And even the second time I was there at the international airport in the capital, Kathmandu, we were seeing piles and piles of international aid from different organisations dumped there, waiting to go out to the most desperate. But it was the coordination that was lacking on the part of the Nepalese government to get it out into the most remote communities. And that was the most difficult thing.
And they're sensitive about this. And you discovered that there's not a willingness to talk often because there's concern that something that someone might say at a lower level will offend the government's sense of being criticized.
Absolutely. And you get a real sense of a very small country that it still wants to obviously retain its sense of sovereignty. It's welcoming the international community, but is very super sensitive about the level of criticism that it's getting about its the relief effort, the coordination. There was so much frustration on the streets of Kathmandu. People were protesting, you know, desperately wanting tents, food, the most basic thing, water. And day after day, night after night, I was seeing people sleep on the streets in the rain, children left homeless. And the government is very sensitive about the level of criticism that it's getting. But people are extremely frustrated as well. They're looking to their government to be able to do more. The Indian government and the Chinese were there, and they were mobilizing and they were supplying tents. But just to give you one example, there was a remote community on the outskirts of Kathmandu that I went to, and 4,000 people in this village had been affected. But only 125 tents had been given out. Mm. So what happens to the other people? And even in those communities, we were getting a sense of the hierarchy. I met a woman who was from one of the lower castes, from the Dalit caste, and she was telling me that, you know, the more powerful families and communities within the affected area were getting all the supplies, and she was missing out.
As a member of the media, who was welcoming you and who was maybe not so thrilled by your presence there?
Well, the Prime Minister came to one of the main squares, Darbar Square, in old Kathmandu, where we were broadcasting live from. And he came to see the work of the army and the local people who were helping to collect some of the old bricks from these 19th century temples that had completely crumbled. And I approached him, but he didn't want to talk. He said, look, the time will come where I will talk, but right now it's not the time. And he was very concerned about saying anything to me, as were his minders and the people around him. But of course, in the outlying communities, in the remote areas where people were desperate to be heard and they felt that they'd been completely cut out from the outside world. In some areas, we were trekking for a few hours to get to their homes. They were trying to show me their destroyed homes. And you really do get a sense of why it's so difficult for aid agencies, why it's so difficult for the government to reach them. You're trekking for hours to get to their homes.
And, you know, there's a peculiar sort of irony and a distasteful irony, in fact, that the biggest movie in the United States is this earthquake movie about Southern California that's all about those moments that happen as the Earth, you know, moves. But in fact, the story of an earthquake is a much longer story of rebuilding. It's not a pretty story. It's not a romantic story. And there's no special effects. It's about the basics.
Absolutely about the basics. You've really sort of made a very important point that it's people have no food, they have no water, they have no shelter. And we, as the international media, leave. We get out. We spend a few weeks there. We cover the story. Then it falls off the news headlines and the agenda. But people are left there to pick their lives up, and it can take decades. And in the case of Nepal, the last one was in 1934. It took decades for them, almost a century for them to rebuild their lives. And we were part of the grieving process as well. They're very religious people, and they couldn't even honor their dead the way that they wanted to. And that for them, here they are, these very devout Hindus, and these religious men were traveling from village to village and speeding up the rituals that they would normally have. A ritual that would take 10 or 15 or 20 days was being done in a few days because of the scale of the disaster, mm-hmm. because thousands have been killed. And so you really got a sense of these very strong, resilient people. I mean, we know of the Gurkhas, we know of the Sherpas, and these people who have a strong sense of pride and a sense of community that just have no idea how they're going to put their lives back together. And you're right, it's not romantic, there's no special effects. It is a story of survival, actually, because they find ways to survive. They find ways to find food. I was going out to these remote communities and I was thinking, there's nothing left here. How are you finding food for your children? And they do. Humans have an extraordinary way of finding food for their children and surviving. And that's what I found most incredible about covering this story.
The BBC special is called Our World, Nepal Survivors Stories. Yelda Hakim, reporter for the BBC, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TIAA CREF, a financial services company helping to create financial outcomes that matter. Learn more at TIAA.org. And Lumosity.com, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving. With brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program, performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com.